indeed in compliance with those portions that were originally questioned. In August of 2012, the Sierra Club appealed that order as well, and we have a hearing coming up in a few weeks before the Court of Appeals. And since DHEC and Kim Nuclear, since our positions were aligned, we did enter a joint brief, and that means that during the hearing, we will be sharing the allotted time for arguments. And I will say that the license, you know, it's been under appeal all of this time, and so Kim Nuclear did submit a license renewal. They, you know, submitted that. We weren't really sure exactly how that would take place, but we are operating under the original license that was appealed, although there have been amendments to it, but the amendments have mainly been changing personnel, names of personnel that are listed in the license, and those types of administrative type changes.
So is DHEC waiting for this to be resolved before you actually
reissue
the license? Well,
we're not sure. Right now, the site is in compliance with the license. Whether it was the old one that was appealed or the new one that was issued, there haven't been any substantial changes to the license, so they're in compliance really with both.
Yeah, I'm more familiar with like MBDS permits that you reapply, and it may be years before you get your license, your MPS permit reissued because of personnel, you know, there's not enough staff or something. So
Right. Is
it because DHEC is understaffed? I'm not saying that's what it is. Or is it because you're waiting for the end of this?
We're waiting,
okay.
Essentially.
Gotcha.
We're waiting. So, okay, so now I'll talk a little bit about the groundwater and surface water monitoring program at the site. As you know, there is a tritium plume. Kim Nuclear samples 178 monitoring locations. These include on-site wells as well as off-site wells and the creek that's nearby. I'll talk a little bit about that in a moment. They sample quarterly. We sample at least 21 of those locations as well, and we split the samples with Kim Nuclear. And this, I know the map is a little bit small, but here you see a map of the site. The blue rectangles represent disposal trenches, and the square colored dots represent monitoring locations for zone 2 wells. And essentially, the plume is traveling in a south-southwesterly direction. It leaves Kim Nuclear property and travels about a half a mile leaves the disposal site proper, remains on Kim Nuclear property, and travels about a half a mile to Mary's Branch Creek, which is right here, enters the creek, travels along the creek, and then where the creek leaves Kim Nuclear property and goes on to Savannah Riverside property is the point of compliance. And so as we monitor this plume, there are three main points that we focus on, and one of those is monitoring well 110. This well is located in the older trench areas of the site, and it's historically had the highest concentration of tritium. And at the headwaters of the creek is location WC0002, and that is showing 311,000 picocuries per liter. I'll explain what those numbers mean in just a moment. And here at the compliance point, which is WC0008, we are seeing 81,200. Now, this data is from the second quarter of 2013. And just to give you an idea, the regulatory standard for the compliance point is 25 millirem per year. And what we're seeing at the compliance point right now equates to about 4 millirem per year. And to put all of that in perspective, the average U.S. citizen would receive on the order of 300 millirem per year just from background radiation from cosmic rays, the Earth, and all of the surroundings. So essentially the site is in compliance as far as the release of tritium from the site. We do require an annual trending report because there are many data locations, many monitoring locations, and of course each of those individual locations, will fluctuate from quarter to quarter and kind of going up and down. And so we have a trending report so that we can monitor the plume movement. And it looks at data over the past 5 years, and there's 27 locations that have been chosen to be included in the report. It involves a statistical analysis, and what the most recent annual trending report showed that 6 of those 27 locations were showing an upward trend, 11 were showing a downward trend, and that includes the point where the plume enters Mary's Branch Creek, WC0002, and the compliance point, WC0008. They're both showing a downward trend in this latest report. And 10 of the locations showed no trend, and that actually includes monitoring well 110, which is the one that I showed you that historically has the higher levels. And just kind of in summary for this, I wanted to point out that the tritium levels are closely monitored at the compliance point to make sure that we're not exceeding regulatory limits. The tritium levels are stable. They've been around 100,000 picocuries per liter, which is around the 4 to 5 millirem range, since about the year 2000. The plume is well defined. It's not changing its shape. And there are, I think another thing to point out that's important, is there are no receptors of the water. That's all I had. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Susan. Questions?
What about well water in the area?
For the private wells?
Private wells.
The private wells are, we do sample private wells once per year, and we have not seen anything above background. We've not seen any tritium in those wells.
Okay. So the compliance point, it's a dose consideration, not a drinking water standard consideration. It's a drinking water standard.
It is a dose consideration, assuming that someone were drinking the water. Drinking the water daily, then they would be allowed by the regulation to receive up to 25 millirem per year at that point on consumption of the water.
Okay. What about backtracking to what they think the source of the tritium was? Do you know what the source is?
Well, the source is obviously the waste that was disposed of there.
Waste, though, in liquid form?
In the early years, there were liquid waste disposed of, scintillation liquids from, that have tritium in them. And those were, I pointed out earlier, the lower, the older trenches that were in the lower, more southerly part of the site. That is where the oldest waste is, and that's where we see the majority, the highest levels of tritium are in the monitoring wells around that area. And we believe it is in part due to the fact that there were, there were more liquids disposed at that time.
Well, I mean, it's not coming from the solid waste, so it's got to be coming from something liquid, right?
Right. Well, tritium can be in any of... tritium can be, I guess, part of any waste that comes in. I mean, there is some tritium, but we do limit liquids to 1%, of incidental amounts of liquid.
So if you look at the point in time when those liquids were disposed of,
mm-hmm.
How long ago was that, do we know?
And probably throughout most of the 70s.
Okay, so it's been 30 40 years since that disposal.
Right.
So you ought to be seeing at the location where that is the source.
That's right.
You ought to see it decreasing reasonably significantly, right?
Well, the monitoring wells are near the source, but they're not. The tritium is migrating downward from zone 1 down into where the zone 2 wells are, and then it's vertically, and then it's traveling horizontally. So eventually, there will be, obviously, tritium decays 12.3 year half-life, but it's a very complex system because the waste is there, the tritium is there, and we're measuring it. So,
but with a 12.3 year half-life, you would expect that to show a decrease over the years. Mm-hmm. And so particularly if it's in the mid-70s, and so you would expect that to continue to go down. And so have you identified a source other than this stuff that was put in the ground in the 70s?
No, there's no other source. I mean, the source is the waste that was disposed.
Is the waste in the groundwater? Or does groundwater ever come into the groundwater? I mean, does the groundwater ever rise up into the trench?
The groundwater, there have been a couple of occasions where the level of the groundwater has come into contact with the bottom of a trench. There have been very few instances of that. But, When the trenches are constructed, they're required to have a five feet of separation between the highest historical water table level and the bottom of the trench. But essentially, now we have the caps in place, mm-hmm. and so I think that's one of the reasons we're seeing more of a stabilization, in some of these levels, because the caps, they're not impenetrable by water because nothing is. But they do, shed water off the site. So all of the trench standpipes are actually dry. And but prior to those caps being placed, obviously the rainwater would percolate through the waste and carry it, vertically downward. And so one of the thoughts is that the groundwater, not that it's rising to the level of the bottom of the trenches, but at times when it, when it rises, right, it's taking some of that tritium and bringing it downward.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know what I was going to ask you. Where does Mary's Branch go after it goes on the Spring River site? Does it empty into, what would that be, Lower Three Runs? I'm trying to figure out if the site, if I'm not mistaken, measures tritium at your compliance point, which is the Savannah River. So does Mary's Branch go into Lower Three Runs?
I think it does, and then onto the Savannah River from there.
Okay. So if that's true, then some of the tritium that is in Lower Three Runs is actually from Barnwell.
Right.
Some would be.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do New Jersey or Connecticut state regulators ever interface with DHEC?
The state regulators do not. Not that I'm aware of. Now, we do attend the Atlantic Compact Commission meetings, and so, we have that interface between the members of the Atlantic Compact, the commissioners, and we provide updates to them on the site. But we don't have regular interactions with the regulators in Connecticut and New Jersey. But we do look at all of the waste that comes from those states, obviously, to make sure that it's in compliance with the waste acceptance criteria at the site.
Other questions? Thank you very much, Susan.
Actually, if you don't mind, one thing I wanted to point out, I know that Mr. Little had a question about any public meetings that we had, and we actually, DHEC actually has an annual update newsletter that we publish each December. And that is on our website now, and I have a few copies here that I could pass around to you all if you'd like to take a look.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
We'll see you next year.
Okay, thank you.
I can't see behind that pillar, but I don't think that Shelley is here. Is she? Oh, there you are. Shelly, I'm sorry. I'm like, I didn't tell you were coming. All right. Would you like to give the rest of the DHEC update?
Yes, I would. Thank you. So, well, it's great to be here. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the council and everyone attending. So, and Happy New Year to you all.
Happy New Year to you, too.
I just wanted to have a brief update on really two topics. One is that topic I focus on, the high-level waste tanks, and an update for that. And then also just a commercial for DHEC Permit Central. So, but to start with, for the high-level waste tanks, I was thinking, really, it's been a long time that we have worked pretty closely, DHEC and the Governor's Nuclear Advisory Council, and how long has it been? I remember back in 2005, it's been almost 10 years we've been focusing on together very closely on the high-level waste tanks at Savannah River site. Since those aging tanks with leak sites holding about 36 million gallons of highly radioactive and toxic waste, we call the single largest environmental threat in the state of South Carolina. So we put a lot of effort and energy into it, and we've made a tremendous amount of progress with the Savannah River site and, of course, with the council. So, of course, the two tanks closed in 97, tanks 18 and 19 closed in 2012, and just at the end of last year, Savannah River site closed tanks 5 and 6 also, so we were very happy to hear that. That's tremendous good news. It's a sign of risk reduction in the state. And just to let you know, we were also quite pleased with that because at DHEC, I wanted to make sure that we did all of the regulatory paperwork well in advance and that we were not on the critical path at all for closure of those two tanks. And so we did have all of that regulatory paperwork finished well before the field schedule was ready to start closure. So again, I was glad we could be a help rather than any kind of delay, and we contributed to early closure of those two tanks, 5 and 6, at the end of last year. So that's great news, the closure of those tanks. DHEC recently also heard a presentation on how Savannah River site removed most of the waste from tank 12. And so we heard that presentation, and then DOE will be submitting a formal request to us for them to be able to cease waste removal for that tank 12 in order to move on to the sampling phase. And once we receive that formal request, we'll review it and respond. So those were the two recent updates for the tank closure. And I'll just say in general that there's no doubt about it. That's excellent news. It means that waste has been treated and tanks closed and risk reduced in the state of South Carolina. So having said that, at DHEC, we want the success to continue. And we have milestones for the closure of all of the old-style tanks. We have those milestones that are enforceable for treatment and tank closure there that stretch. The milestones stretch from now until 2028, actually. And the sad thing is that right now we know that those milestones are in jeopardy, starting possibly as early as 2015. And it's really for two reasons. And one is that the large treatment facility, the big one, the salt waste processing facility, as we've all heard, that treatment facility has been delayed. And the second reason is DHEC believes a lack of funding for treatment and for the high-level waste program in general. So at the last council meeting, I gave I hit heavily on the funding issue, and so you're well aware that we've written letters to the secretary, the energy secretary, emphasizing the need for DOE to direct funding, the full amount of funding needed here for the site to continue to have success, to move forward, to treat waste, to close the tanks and reduce the risk, and to fulfill the promises that DOE has made to South Carolina. We continue to push hard for and urge DOE to get the money needed to address this critical risk in the state. So It's again those two things: the delay of the large treatment and the lack of funding. We're also urging DOE to treat as much waste as they can and to as soon as they can and to ramp it up. The key to this solution is treatment. Is treatment of the waste. Once the waste is treated, the tanks can be closed. And so, it's imperative to get the salt waste processing facility up online as soon as possible. It's imperative to actually run the existing treatment facilities to their largest or maximum capacity. And again, the issue of treatment rate and funding are linked. For example, I've stated before that we feel the FY14 funding level is way too low for high-level waste. And as a result, I believe the target for canister production, that's taking the waste and turning it into glass into canisters, for FY14 is about 150 canisters. Well, if you compare that to their usual rate, in the past couple of years of 275, a little bit, closer to 300, or even the conceptual rate, which might be around 480 canisters per year, when you compare that to what they're hoping to get in 14, 150 canisters, you can see that the DWPF, that big treatment existing facility, is running much at a much lower rate than it could, and that is in large part due to funding or lack thereof. So we're urging DOE to treat as much waste as possible. Of course, they need the money to do that, and so we've been asking DOE headquarters to funnel that money to the state so that treatment can happen. To make up for the SWPF delay, there are other kinds of treatments that could be added too. And so we'd also like DOE to put those in place if possible. But you've probably heard of the small column ion exchange. That's an additional treatment that could be added, just as an example of one option. But again, that takes the funding. And so the bottom line is that DOE headquarters needs to send the right amount of money to run the treatment as much as they can with existing, and then add on top of that treatment capacity to make up for the delay of construction in the big treatment facility, the SWPF. Okay. So, and then also, I just wanted to note on DHEC Permit Central, and the reason I thought of this is that with Dr. Mikowski being present, the Savannah River National Laboratory having new innovative technologies that spin off into new businesses. I thought I'd mention to y'all some new customer service tools that DHEC added last year, really to help new businesses get a very clear understanding of the environmental aspects up front, all in one picture. What are the permits that they need to be able to start a new business in South Carolina? And it was launched in March of last year by the governor. So we were very, very pleased to see that. And this is what our website looks like. So it's part of it is a web-based tool so that people can see it any time of the day when DX is closed. They can see it at 2:00 in the morning after they've had pizza in their pajamas. And so they can actually go through, there's an interactive quiz on the website. You can say, hey, I'm a veterinarian, or hey, I'm a restaurant, or hey, I'm a power plant, what kinds of permits do I need? And you can go through that interactive questionnaire, and at the very end it tells you what kinds of permits that you need. They can also come in and talk with a Permit Central team, which has people from air, water, and waste on it, and we can also tell them that and talk with them about that, really tailored to their specific business proposal. I asked Tom Clements when we were in development of this, who's here today, and he helped me with some of the development. So these up here are the citizen and the non-business permits and the public notices and check the status of your application. Those are all were added as with helpful comments from Tom Clements. So, and I'll just note that we did actually win an award. We put a lot of effort into trying to be very clear and very helpful. and we were pleased that that was recognized in a recent award from the National Public Health Information Coalition. So again, we're getting almost 200 page views per day on Permit Central, just that web part of the web alone. And so we think that's pretty good considering we're not giving away free concert tickets. And we've got a lot of really great feedback in relation to the new customer service tools here. But that's really all that I had for today, the tanks and the Permit Central. But do you have any questions?
Congratulations on the award.
Thank you.
Questions? While you're here, I just want to, you did a great job at the last meeting talking about the seeps in Vault 4 and the potential remediation that we didn't know anything about except that DOE was going to do it. So I know you guys weren't here at the last meeting, but I think in the April meeting, if we can get an update on what you're doing for those, that seep remediation. And Shelley has pointed out that we need money to close those tanks. GNAC has certainly pointed out that we need money to close those tanks because they're not going to last forever, and they're springing leaks. So I think you have a new leak to talk about, Terry. Do you have a new leak?
Thanks for the opportunity. For those I didn't tell earlier, I'm Terry Spitzer. For those who don't know me, I'm assistant manager for Waste's position at the Savannah site for DOE, and part of my job entails treating the waste in those tanks, managing it safely, treating it, and dispositioning it while meeting our commitments to the state to the best of our ability. I want to quickly say that, no, we do not have a new leak in our tanks. What we have found, though, is some additional cracking in one of our Type 1 tanks. This was discovered as part of a routine inspection. You know, we have a very robust program of inspection of our tanks, preservation of our tanks, and annual inspection of our tanks to look for any signs of degradation or deterioration. During that process last year, I believe it was in the latter part of September, early October, during remote camera inspection inside the partial annular space outside of the primary wall of tank four, we noted some indications in those photos that looked like potential cracks. They were in the vicinity of another crack, or a series of cracks, that had been in there for quite some time. So this was a tank that had existing cracks previous to this. For some 20 years now, we've managed the waste in that tank at a fairly low level, somewhere around 12 feet is the current level of very dilute supernatant that's in that tank. So the cracks that were noted and the previous crack are in the same vicinity, and they're up around 234 inches, which I believe is around 20 feet up from the floor of the tank. So they're significantly higher than any waste in the tank. They don't pose any risk of any leak. And we believe, based on our tank integrity program that I mentioned earlier, that the tank is structurally sound. So we don't have concerns that we're going to have additional leakage down lower. These are in sites where we've experienced stress corrosion cracking in wells. This was an artifact of the construction methodologies and the uses of those tanks in early days. This was among the very first of the tanks that were constructed at Savannah River site, as a matter of fact. So this is legacy cracking, we believe. I'm not certain, I can't confirm that it hasn't occurred new. This is something we'll have to evaluate. But my guess would be it's part of the cracking that was associated with the original crack that was found some years ago. So yes, we have found additional cracking. No, we don't have new leaks. And let me also say, since you called me up here, thank you, that I would agree with everything that Shelley mentioned. And I appreciate the comments that she had regarding waste removal from Tech 12, as well as the closure of Tanks 5 and 6. We're working very hard, even in spite of not very good budget this year, and perhaps some downturn the previous year, and a lot of hard luck with respect to having layoffs on our operating contract, furloughs as a result of cessation of funding for the federal government here in the fall, and some issues with facilities, and most recently, I guess, with the weather, the freeze that we've had this week, which is kind of holding us back a little bit. But we're working very diligently to continue that process with Tank 16, which is another tank that's scheduled to be closed in the FFA. by the end of fiscal year 2015, September of 2015. And I believe we're on progress to do that, given what I know about the budget today. If we gain some additional resources from Congress in our FY 2014 budget, we're looking at shifting using some of those resources to pay for the sampling and analysis that's necessary to move forward with that in Tank 12 as well, so that we can hopefully, if not meet, but come close anyway to our commitments in FY 15. So that's still our goal. We are ahead of schedule today, but we are very much threatened, as Shelley mentioned, by facility not availability, that being the SWPF. You've heard all about that, and where we are with that. But also the budgets, which could help us if we had the right funding to mitigate some of those delays. So thank you. If you have any other questions about the Tank 4 tracking, in fact, we're in the midst now of publishing some information for the public. We haven't finished our rollout of that at this point, so it's maybe breaking news, I guess. But the bottom line is that we are moving forward with the public notification. This was noted in the CAM road inspection, I might add, late September, late October. It was actually found during that inspection at that time. The analysis of those photos went on into November, I believe. And then at that point, we've been moving forward at that point, I guess, with putting together what kind of notification would be, as well as doing further analysis on the situation.
Thanks, okay. Terry. And I have seen a presentation on your tank inspection program, which I think would be a good thing for the rest of the council to see. So I know that you are trying to stay ahead of this, but those tanks are wearing out, and we got to get that waste out of them.
And you're very correct. They won't last forever. They're carbon steel tanks. We'd be happy to present to the council on both on Saltstone Vault 4 situation, mm-hmm. As well as our tank.
Tank, yeah. That'll be good. Thank you. Okay. I'm sorry.
A follow-up question maybe about Tank 4. When the crack